Good morning. Today is Monday, June the 8th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Chris Hartley. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Happy Monday to you.
Well, you know, sunny skies kind of do that to us, don't they?
Yeah, we've had some really interesting weather, but it's nice to see the sun poking out today. Hopefully it'll stick around for us this week.
Yeah, just kind of remind us of something that we look forward to, that we can enjoy inside, outside, in the backyard, or anywhere else. Winston, why do we say it?
I found an interesting one, but I think I'll say that for tomorrow. Red Letter Day.
Give us the boring one then, huh?
Why do we call an important day in our lives a red letter day?
Because the calendar manufacturers put red ink on those days that are most important. I don't know. Chris, you got any idea?
Oh, gosh. All I know is red ink was my English papers had a lot of them. I bet it has something to do with writing or something to do with edits. I'm not sure.
Well, you mentioned that. May I'm going to adjust mine to say those are days that you can't make money because business is closed. Holidays.
Oh.
You were closer with your first one.
Oh, okay.
In the early prayer books, the saints' days and church festivals were printed in red ink. Some prayer books are still printed in this style, and many calendars today have the Sundays and holidays indicated by red letters or figures. So a red letter day, since it's a holiday, is one that we look forward to with pleasure or look back upon with joy.
Kind of like today, right, Chris?
There you go. I'm going to put a red letter on today's calendar.
Yeah. It's a talk show day. Well, yay!
Now I'm gonna have to listen tomorrow to see what the interesting one was.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Winston.
Oh my! So how's life in the big house right now?
Well, I'll tell you, as you can imagine, for everybody, it's interesting for everybody, but in education, particularly, we have a lot of moving parts right now, Brian, with all that's going on. A lot of moving parts for sure. So
is there anything
kind of like a hodgepodge of what you want to talk about today, to be honest with you.
Is there a certainty on anything?
No. That's the biggest thing, is just trying to boil things down and sort through all of the ambiguity around the different scenarios to try to get to some levels of certainty so that some decisions can be made. Right now, as you know, we're waiting until June 15th. We've got budgets that are up in the air at the state level. So hopefully we'll have an approved budget for next year on June 15th. So we're a few days away from that. We're working on frameworks around what does it look like for Humboldt County schools and the potential for reopening and getting back to on-site instruction. We've got that in the play. And a part of that, just a part of that decision alone, are several factors that come into play. You know, so there's a lot of moving pieces right now for everybody in education.
Well, let's look at typically the graduation processes that are going to be embraced this year. Are there, and I'm going to presume, and maybe this isn't safe, but make the presumption that nothing for kindergartners, nothing for first, second, third, fourth, nothing from elementary to junior high, and probably nothing from junior high to high school. Are any of those schools going to be doing things other than, I don't know, maybe some kind of a semi-social event?
You know, the schools are doing I'm aware several of our districts are doing graduation ceremonies. They're just very different. It's everything from high schools using kind of a drive-in theater style, where you have a screen. I know Fortuna High did some pretty creative stuff around that concept, where families were in vehicles and coming through time slots to see their students receive a diploma, whether it's virtually or not. Some are doing virtual recorded ceremonies. I've heard of other eighth grade programs, too, still kind of doing the drive-in style piece. You know, so, yeah, the traditional graduations that I'm aware of, eighth grade and high school graduations, everybody's putting something together. I am not familiar with, what I think Eureka might be waiting till July, but I think they have options, basically, still. And I don't know if they've selected a final one. But, no, folks are still proceeding, you know, and the same thing for the county office. We have our graduation ceremony for our Eureka Community School program. And I just did a recording for the speech for that on Friday, you know, and so we'll be putting that together with the principal's remarks, and faculty will be presenting students with their diplomas. It's just via a Zoom type of format, right, instead of in person and personal. But then also, Brian, you have some of our really smalls out there who can do smaller graduations and, you know, make sure that they're adhering to the guidelines from public health. So, yeah, people are still doing it.
Do you have any idea where we got the idea that graduating from kindergarten or sixth grade was something more than the same thing from third to fourth grade and it became an event? That happened in that epoch of 25 years when I wasn't before we started with the kids. It seems like everybody needs to have something all along the way, which...
Yeah, I think it's all about celebrating transitions, to be honest with you. You know, and so folks look at the different grade levels as different opportunities to transition. So, like kindergarten, I think the thought is that, okay, you're moving into now your next 10 formal years of education, where the first couple were just kind of prepping you, getting you used to school. And so kind of that 10-year mark going from kindergarten to that phase. And as far as like eighth grade to high school, that's a kind of a no-brainer. That one makes a lot of sense. You're transitioning into your last 4 years of school and generally a different facility with a, you know, a different curriculum with high school graduation requirements and all those sorts of things. So I think they just, people have organized them around different important transition points.
Okay, well, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, frankly, maybe school was more important to some people than it was to me.
You just cruised right on through.
Yeah. Oh, darn. Missed it, huh? Pass the pizza, please.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. Anyway, yeah, folks are doing what they can, you know, to celebrate. And we at the county office, we just finished up what we like to call our award season. This is the time of the year where we have all of our events. And I got to give our team some real credit and all the schools that participated, you know, that everybody did their best to try to give students the attention they have earned, you know, everything from the Sila by Literacy event to we did the Innovate Business Challenge. I think you're familiar with that,
right,
one where
right.
The kids pitched their entrepreneurial projects, and they did an amazing job with that. And the judges were all basically on live Zoom with the students as they presented. And the judges were critiquing and doing their questioning and all of that, all on Zoom. And I'm happy to say it really went off without a hitch.
Very cool.
And then,
very cool.
We'll
talk about some of your staff recognitions when we come back. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Chris Hartley. Chris, as you look at the facility use, you know, the big neat fun building that you guys have got there in the parking lot. What are the protocols? What are the changes? I would imagine demand has changed, or you guys have had to curtail a lot of stuff that facility would have been used for. What are the implications there?
So Brian, you're referring to the Sequoia Conference Center, and to be up front, actually, the Sequoia Conference Center has remained full through this whole situation. It's actually been the center for operation of emergency services. It's been OES's holding point, communication center, as Humboldt County has moved through the pandemic. So it's been very busy in there. It looks a little bit like NASA when you go in. It's pretty cool. How the room's been utilized to support all the community services here in Humboldt County. And that goes back to, you know, an agreement we've had that if things were to get weird or any kind of natural disaster or any kind of situation, very much like what we're in now, that would be an incident command type post. And that's exactly what it's been used for. So it's been active. Of course, we had to cancel all of our events. We've canceled all of our events up through, I think, around mid-August at this point. There's a couple of potential events that will happen at the end of August. But those were all the things that, like everybody else, had to start doing immediately, is basically shutting down all of our, you know, any kind of event where there'd be a community gathering or a large number of people come together.
That's why I was wondering, how far out are you being advised? Because on the flip side, obviously, we're getting a lot of people saying, well, when are we going to be able to? I would think that these guys would be giving you a pretty good barometer of what their expectations are as far as scheduling out. You know, how long do they want that facility?
Yeah, we're going to anticipate them being there to the end of July, and then we'll go ahead and do our kind of typical deep cleaning that we do over the summer and get ready for the fall and get ready for the next year. So we're going to remain optimistic that those things are going to happen. Of course, anybody who's reserved it, you know, in those months, Brian, we've got to give them a caution, like, you know, the chances of this is there could be some cancellation still. But, you know, we would like to be able to believe we can proceed, you know, with some normal activity. And, again, it's going to come really down to what are the limits and restrictions on the number of people that can gather in one area. That's going to be key.
Well, that's what I was wondering, Chris. With that facility, it certainly is flexible, and you guys can, you know, set it up so that the configurations are whatever somebody wants. But as you're looking down the road, are you going to have the equivalent of the fire marshal there, making sure that it doesn't go over a certain limit, particularly if this thing is extended, as some folks are indicating, maybe until next spring, that the gathering size is going to be 100 or 125, and that's it, and that's it. And, you know, that just is the way it's going to be. I mean, I would think that there's another level of monitoring that you and the troops are going to have to, I guess, put in place semi-permanently.
Yeah, sure. It's the same, you know, it's like any other facility here locally. I personally, I'm going to side on err on the side of caution as far as group capacities go, and we just won't book it for any events that flirt with that number, whatever that happens to be or whatever the criteria are. Folks just are going to have to find different alternatives like they're doing right now. But we don't want to be in a position where we're body counting and it's that close down to the wire. You know, there's just different ways that we can make things happen, you know, and that's what we've found here in the last, well, gosh, now several weeks, couple months that we've been doing this, is we can get super creative, and folks have found ways to continue to have their events and just in a different format. But I think, you know, moving forward with caution, but at the same time, a good dose of optimism is a good approach.
Well, and you got a big enough parking lot, you could do patio dining for an event.
Yeah, you could do something like that. I mean, you know what? That's not too far out of the question if the weather's permitting. You know, we found creative ways to still be able to handle all of our awards events this year. And, you know, that human creativity and ability to innovate is certainly, we've tapped into that during the last few weeks.
Now, are you using a lot of the electronic aspects there? Or are you planning on it as you move into summer and the fall with some of those different teaching and conference events that you guys have hosted and that you've put on historically using that facility?
Well, I mean, it's the nice thing is the technology is there, the tools are there if it's appropriate. I would see that as if you were, I mean, you have options, right? So what that allows you to think about is different ways of delivering a way for people to get together and utilizing the technologies around Zoom and having Zoom meetings. Boy, we've gotten really good at it. You know, that is for sure. You look at how far we've come just in how you manage those and how the protocols for running a Zoom session or any sort of platform like that. We've evolved very quickly, and that is the primary way we do business now. For us, one of the things I've seen as a major benefit going down the road is less travel to Sacramento and places that weren't willing to do Zoom meetings in the past. They're very good at it now, and so that'll be a huge time saver for a lot of folks in education and business. You know, instead of having to get in the car and drive 5.5 hours to go attend some sort of conference or training, there really is no excuse in the future to not use the technologies that we have available for a Zoom session or something like it.
That's what I was going to ask you. So as you guys are putting together your operating budget for that facility, is the demand going to be there for you to be able to hit your nut?
Probably not. I would imagine it won't be there, and Brian, just the nature of where we're at on that is, as we're planning our finances next year, I'm pretty positive we're not going to get to the number that we'd like to be able to pay our costs. So that's just something we have to take into account.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30. Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place. What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon. Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Chris Hartley. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. So, Chris, as you are looking ahead, you know, summertime, you mentioned that, you know, facilities sprucing up. Well, I would suspect that that's probably not going to be too encumbered with the edicts that are in place at this point. But you're going to be very cognizant of financial commitments, whether it's the basic stuff or just the counseling that you're giving each of the districts. Are you looking at their budgets yet and starting to provide them a little bit of advice, perhaps, on some cost-saving measures that you've been able to take advantage of that the individual school districts might be able to as well?
Well, Brian, so yeah, for sure. Right now is budget season for school districts. So everybody in the month of June will be adopting their budget for the upcoming year plus the two following years. And so the way education works is you budget for the upcoming year and then you budget out for 2 years to see how things are looking to make sure you have maintain a positive cash position and you're hitting everything. And the struggle right now is with the state potential cuts. It's really difficult. I mean, we've got two proposals on the table. We've got the governor's May revise, which basically cuts education by 10% or 7% if you take the COLA away. So it's just a massive cut to education, whereas in January we were anticipating an increase of around 2.5% to 3%. So you went from that to a negative 7 to 10. And then you have the legislation, the Senate and Assembly, who have come back and they don't agree with the governor's May revise, and their proposal is to not cut education and to see what will happen with regards to the federal relief. If the federal relief comes in, hey, we're looking great. We are we're back to the budget that we anticipated. If the federal relief doesn't come in to the a level they expect, the legislators would rather do the deferral situation, meaning we are entitled to receive the same level of funding, but the payments will be deferred. And that's what we really hit in the Great Recession when the state went sideways. They cut our budgets, but they also weren't able to pay us on time. So it's basically, you know, you're not getting paid. And so they're deferring
your
payments.
So, Chris, that's an IOU at a lower level, or that's an IOU at the same level?
It's an IOU at the same level. So basically you're entitled to, let's say, your $5 million allotment in June. Well, they're going to say, sorry, we're not going to pay you that because we don't have it. And so what that does, the key to that is that puts districts in a position where they have to have cash.
Right.
Cash is king. So in order to pay your bills, you got to have a savings and you got to have a reserve. And so that's what we're working with districts on right now, is that items of not only balancing your budget, but looking to districts and anticipating what these deferrals could be to look at those months where they're going to have problems with cash.
So
that's a whole other flow chart, right? Like how we deal with that. So that right now on the budget piece is really important to us. We're working really hard with our districts on that, and they're doing a great job, and the school boards are doing a great job trying to work through it.
So in effect, you've got 9 budgets that you're working. You've got next year, 2, 3, year 2, year 3. You've got status quo. You've got what was anticipated as a bump, and then you've got if it doesn't happen and you're getting IOUs.
Yes, you got a lot of scenarios we're trying to plan for right now, and so it is the work of districts right now, working on that whole budget scenario and scenario planning, and the role of the county office is to really provide guidance and give them what those options look like and be a thought partner with them as they're making tough decisions, And I'm proud of the work everybody's doing. It'll be nice to get some answers from the state level here in the next couple of weeks, even though the answers we get we might not like, but at least we'll have, we'll know where we're at and move forward from there.
Now, I saw something looking ahead into the political season for the fall that had, basically it was pitting labor against business for education and another round of taxation associated with that. Are you familiar? I don't even remember what the name was. It was just one of those things I got from the State Broadcasting Association indicating that it was going to be a knockdown, drag-out, high-profile kind of battle.
No, I'm not aware of that particular initiative.
Good. Then I won't bust your chops about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe, I haven't seen that same article or I'm not getting it. But everybody's advocating for funding right now and as the recession's coming, is here. And we're all going to be struggling. And right now, a big focus is how are we going to plan for for schools coming back to on-site instruction? And there's three critical areas to that. The one that we're talking about, finances and resources, is huge to schools. When we start looking at reopening our facilities, you look at the amount of money that's going to need to be committed to the health and safety aspects of our campuses.
The new stuff.
Yeah, purchasing PPE devices, purchasing more disinfecting, more aggressive cleaning, things like thermometers. I mean, you can imagine the supply list. There's going to be a need for more financial resources. So you have health and safety as a component. You have finance and resources, and then you have the other component, teaching and learning. And so no one of those areas exists alone. They're all connected, right now at this very moment as schools are looking into the fall.
So, Chris, as you reference some of those changes with the health and safety, the maintenance, those typically aren't areas that we hear an awful lot about increasing staff sizing. Certainly, though, if you've got more of that stuff having to happen, you need more people to do it because you can't, you can't continue to stretch others thin. Is there any kind of wiggle room for some of these folks, or are you going to be looking more for volunteers and the equivalent of the in-classroom teacher's aides to help carry the load a little bit?
Well, that might be some of that discussion you heard about at the state level around labor. I mean, it's very much a district-by-district issue, and having good communications and good conversations with your labor units, whether they're union or not, doesn't really matter. The fact is communicating with your teams around what is the scope of their work traditionally, what are the current challenges we're facing, and so what are the current needs of the work, and how can we come to agreement on making modifications so that everybody understands it and feels good about any shifts of the type of things that we need to do. I think it'd be we would be not thinking clearly if we thought we could just continue with our normal job functions as we've always done. We've got to shift and we've got to pivot around our new challenges. And I've seen that happening very well here locally with districts and schools because they're communicating with their staffs and people are problem solving this together. But yeah, I mean we're doing things differently right now. I mean here you and I are we're having this conversation over. I'm sitting here at my desk on the speakerphone, where typically we'd be in the booth having this conversation.
That's right, and I don't have to share any of the 15 donuts I have around me, huh?
Yes, they're all yours, baby.
Yeah, sure. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Chris Hartley. Chris, with some of the different challenges that are out there, whether they're the cultural ones or whether they're the financial ones, are all the services that the schools have been able to afford the past years, are those still going to be in place? Are they mandated that they have to be in place? What are some of those challenges that are out there that we may not be aware of?
Well, of course, and it comes back to the level of site-based instruction that we'll be moving into, which I hope will be close to normal, and that is yet to be determined as we're working with public health on the different factors that influence if we can come back to a school site instruction, which, again, we really hope we can, and we're working towards that. But with the current year situation, yeah, all those positions are still at play, Brian. So when the governor basically allowed schools to be on a hold harmless for the rest of the school year, which is ending this week for just about every district in the county, that all those employees, all those services remained intact. And so just because on-site education ceased did not mean that the services and those employees were no longer active. So everybody's been on active work. The nature of their work certainly obviously has changed. So all your typical services have all been in play as we've been in this situation for the last several weeks. So moving into next year, the biggest factor on what amount of services will be in play will be the budget. And as we just spent a little time a bit ago talking about that, what will the ultimate cuts look like? Will that lead to having to look at positions and taking a look at if districts need to balance their budgets by eliminating a few positions? Is that a reality? And again, that'll be very district by district. But what I've seen at this point is I don't see any massive layoffs potentially coming, particularly if the legislator's budget goes through, which shows that there won't be a lot of cuts to the budget from what we anticipated, but rather the issue of deferred payments. So, you know, again, we're waiting for more information so we can make those decisions. But we've planned for it, you know, through different scenario planning.
Are you recommending to the school districts that if they have construction plans or remodeling plans for this summer or for next year to kind of put those on hiatus at this point, unless they're under contract already?
Not necessarily. It depends on the funding source. So if those were approved bond funds, then that's outside of the state budget scenario, right? That's an approved bond funding. In a lot of cases, the funding is there depending on when they went to sell their bonds. So you could have a district that has the funds available right now for their construction projects. And so, no, why would you wait? I think it's important to keep those projects going. For nothing else, it helps the local economy, run the trades, keeping them working and honoring those contracts that you have.
All good news.
And that was another. Sorry, go ahead.
All good news there, bud.
Yeah, that is good news,
yeah.
You know, and that's one of the reasons when the governor continued to pay us, the caveat is you got to continue to honor your contracts. So
across
that's very important.
Across the board for everybody. Thank you, sir.
Hey, have a good day.
All right, have fun with your Zooms today.
All right, Brian. Take care, everybody.
See everybody tomorrow.